Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Kate Spencer.
And we are not experts.
No. But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
That's true. And you can visit our website, forever35podcast.com, for links to everything we mention on the show, which is occasionally actually about serums. And you can follow us on Twitter at Forever 35 Pod and on Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast. And you can join the Forever 35 Facebook group where the password is serums. You can also join, follow, subscribe to the Forever 35 subreddit at reddit.com/r/Forever35.
And you can call us or text us at 781-591-0390. And you can email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com. And, you know, if you do like the show, we so greatly appreciate a review on Apple Podcasts. So thank you for taking the time to do that if you so choose.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, Kate, here we are. It's Friday night.
Let's break it down. I'm already in my pajamas. I'm braless.
Oh, you're two steps ahead of me. I'm jealous.
Are you in real clothes right now?
Well, I mean, quote unquote, real clothes. Let's okay. Be. I had to take Henry to a doctor's appointment today, so I'm not in like total schlub clothes, but I am. I mean, my pants still have an elastic waist.
As they should, Dori. I would be offended if you were like, I buttoned up these pants.
Oh, God. No. Although it is going to be chilly in LA this weekend.
I know. It's already starting to change. You can feel
it. I'm excited.
I am too.
I'm excited to like get out a cozy sweater.
Like trick your body into believing we have seasons.
Yeah. It's supposed to rain.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm. Maybe have a cup of tea. Maybe read a mystery by a fire.
Oh, we have a fireplace.
Okay, I like where this is going.
I don't hate it.
Maybe Dori's hotel is in your heart and not, and you can find it anywhere.
Dori's hotel is wherever you want it to be.
And this weekend, as we are recording, it's going to be in our own homes.
That's true.
I am excited about the prospect of getting cuddly, especially after this kind of particularly exhausting week for all people.
Yeah. Have you just been like bone tired all week?
Yes. Yes. I texted you about this because it was like 3-4 in the afternoon and I almost took a nap. I mean, so we're recording at the tail end of election week in the US that Friday evening, and I could just go to sleep for 48 hours.
Yeah. Yesterday, I was like really tired, but somehow, like, it's like I'm really tired all day, and then around like 8 or 9, I get an annoying second wind, and then I'm up till like 11 or midnight.
Whoa, that's late for you.
I know, it's very annoying.
What are you doing with your second wind? Like,
okay, so
take me on this journey.
Well, last night was a new journey because Matt decided that he wanted a dartboard.
Dori. What?
Matt decided that he wanted to start playing darts.
Like at 9 o'clock at night, he decided this?
No, no. He had ordered it, and but it came.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday, I guess. Yeah. Or the day before. I don't know. I don't remember. Because he was feeling nostalgic for the games of darts that he used to play with his dad. Except his dad didn't really play. Like, his dad kind of was like ignoring him whilst Matt played darts. I don't know. Didn't totally follow. But he was like, I got a dartboard and he installed it. And then he was like, do you want to play darts? And I was like, sure. Never actually like played a full game of darts, it turns out.
Okay.
Have you?
Yes.
So you know the whole thing about 301 points?
Oh, no. I just mean like I would have been to a bar and I've thrown darts against people.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, but like I've never played like a game. Like I've thrown darts before, but I played like the official rules of darts.
I don't know the official rules. I just like I definitely have tallied a score, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I've never truly played a game of darts in the way that you were being forced to play with your husband.
Yes, I had never played a game of darts and a real game of darts either. But you start with 301 points, and the point is, and the goal of the game is to get to zero without busting, like without going over. It's very complicated.
It sounds annoying.
It was, and I was winning like most of the game, but then I couldn't get to zero, and then Matt won, which is fine. It's fine. I'll get better.
You know, one thing we've talked about on our show is like sharing hobbies with a partner or spouse. I actually think this is kind of a fun thing for you two to do together.
Yeah, it was actually pretty fun. I'm not gonna lie.
Bet it was.
So that's what I was doing until about 11. Then I had to play some Maj, of course.
Holy shit. You started a game at 11 o'clock at night? Who am I talking to right now?
I mean,
this is crazy.
Games of Maj on the computer.
Okay, the computer,
the iPad, take 5 to 7 minutes. It's not like I'm sitting down for like 3 hours.
All right. Copy that. Okay.
And then finally, I was like, okay, it's time for bed.
And then did you go to bed?
I did.
Okay. All right.
Kate, I'm a gamer now. But
you really are.
I'm a gamer of only old-timey games.
I eat old-timey candy and you play old-timey games.
Yep. I play Mahjong with two different groups now. Like every other week. And I was talking with one of the groups and I was like, you guys, we should really learn how to play bridge.
Oh
like,
my
I
God.
I have wanted to learn how to play bridge for decades. I think I've told this story on the podcast before that I asked my grandmother once, because my grandparents were like huge bridge players. I mean, they played like well into their 90s.
Wow.
And I asked my grandmother once if she could teach me how to play bridge. And she was like, it's very complicated.
Oh.
Like she was basically like, no. But like, I think she just couldn't be bothered. You know what I mean? Which like, I kind of respect that. Anyway, so I never learned how to play bridge. And I really want to learn how to play bridge. So I think that's my next old timey game.
I mean, now seems like the time.
Right? What else am I doing? Literally nothing.
I wish I had it in me to learn a complicated card game. I feel like Mahjong taught me that might not be my thing.
That's fine.
I know, but it seems like it would be fun.
You know what? It's really fun.
Like, in theory, it seems fun, but the learning part kind of makes it hard for my brain.
You know, I found it very complicated and hard for like, I don't know, a week or so. And then it just like all of a sudden clicked. And then you're like, oh, okay, I get it now. And now I feel like I'm starting to get into the strategy of it. You know?
I do know. I mean, I can imagine competitive you.
The fun thing is that, especially one of the groups I play with, They're also very competitive.
Oh my God.
We really have a time. I mean, but that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to play one of these games, like, you kind of want to be competitive.
I guess.
I mean, like, what's the fun in not being competitive when you're playing like Bridge or Mahjong?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm a particularly competitive person.
That's fine.
So I'm not sure. As you're saying this, I'm like, I don't know. It maybe I think it would be fun not being competitive, but
it's like friendly competition, though.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I do like a win.
Exactly. You get it.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I like to win things.
I don't know. Anyway, I've been yammering. I wanted to talk to you about your election boundaries.
Okay. So thank you for asking. I have, even though this has been a truly tumultuous and emotional and sad and at times happy kind of week, and hopefully we'll end on a happy note. We're still in the process of waiting for the election to be called. Yep. But going into it, I knew that it was going to be hard for me emotionally with my anxiety, everything else. So I set a bunch of boundaries for myself, Dory. Mm-hmm. And I kind of implemented a bunch of self-care practices, and bizarrely, it was successful. I say bizarrely because I find like most often I will say I'm going to do something and I don't really follow through. But for whatever reason, I just could tell I really needed to take care of myself and try to make sure I was still, you know, rested and fed and moving my body and not attached to my phone. So I've blocked myself from Twitter completely, something I know I've talked about before on this show, but I did it again. I used mm-hmm. the app Freedom, which is an app that it's a blocker app. I use it for writing, but I basically needed to make it so that I could not never again look at Twitter. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even if I deleted my Twitter account, I would still find a way to look at people's tweets. So mm-hmm. this means I can't even, like, you've sent me tweets this week and I can't see them.
You can't even see them in the text?
I can see them in the text, but often they'll have like a video or you need to expand. And then when I click through from the text, I'm blocked.
I see.
Which, you know, is fine. And that has been life-saving, life-changing. It's been, especially during election results, you know, I've already been obsessively checking my phone and waking up in the middle of the night and looking for updates and stuff like that. So setting that boundary was really important to me. And I set up a bunch of things for me to do. I donated blood on election day, which was something I'd never done before. I made sure I had a plan in terms of like getting food. Mm-hmm. So that I wasn't stressed about that. I took a very long bath on two nights ago and watched Schitt's Creek in the bathtub for the 7,000th time.
Amazing.
I just did stuff and I tried to plan it. I made sure I got physical activity. I just tried to make sure all these things were in place so that I would do okay. And also, like, one thing I did speak about with my therapist, I also set up a therapy appointment for the week. And also, you know, I'm on Prozac, and I think that has helped me with my anxiety. So this, you know, the 2016 election was a doozy for me emotionally. Mm-hmm. And I was very wary of how I was going to process this. But I felt like it has really helped to have these practices to fall back on, which, like, I know is the whole theme of this podcast. And yet, I'm still learning.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of stuff like culminated in you being able to do this for the election.
I have to say, my whole therapy appointment was me being like, I think I'm proud of myself. Like, yeah. I feel okay. And my therapist was, and then I was like, oh, I think I've done the work on myself a little bit.
Yeah.
And that was really gratifying, but it's like a slog. I mean, like, it's been really hard, and I never realized I was doing
this. Now you have this toolkit.
Dory, I do. I have a toolkit.
You do.
I know. I really know. And also I feel like one thing that was helpful for me was like knowing what would work for me and what wouldn't. Like, for example, I want to watch The Queen's Gambit, a show that you have recommended. but I knew like this was not the week to start it. And so like all I could really do is watch Schitt's Creek. I can't read a book right now. I'm having a hard time writing. That's fine. I just keep turning on Schitt's Creek and just letting that wash over me. So
that's great.
It was, you know, it's interesting setting up these kind of boundaries for oneself. I'd be curious if other people have examples in their own lives of this. It doesn't necessarily need to be politically related, but interesting.
Yeah, let us know.
Also, like, I kept doing the things like I made sure I washed my face. I made sure I flossed. Just those like annoying things that you don't want to do, but you feel better when you do them. So anyway, so, you know, hopefully, Dory, this will resolve itself soon. We can move forward and keep fighting.
Hopefully by the time this airs, we will have a definitive answer.
Oh, gosh. From your lips to G-O-D's ears, Dory.
I dealt with everything by just seeking out memes.
Meme therapy is therapy.
That's it. That's all I did. Just sought out memes. They made me laugh.
Don't you think that laughing helped you process the anxiety and the stress and the fear and the sorrow that you might have been experiencing?
I mean, it's like for sure. Yes.
The memes are healing.
Memes heal.
Oh, well, should we take a break?
Let's do that.
Because when we come back, we are talking to a truly extraordinary person, Dr. Michelle Harper.
Someone who actually heals.
Yeah, truly. Someone whose passion in life is healing others.
And she's from Philly, or she lives in Philly.
That's right.
A you know, a pivotal city for this election. So we didn't plan it that way, but look how it turned out.
Just turned out that way. Anyway, yeah. We'll be right back.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You know, Dory, we talk to a lot of really fantastic, intelligent people on this podcast. But I don't know, maybe you're like us and you want to go even deeper.
I'd love to go deeper.
We like to go deep. And that's not only possible with today's sponsor, but also easy to accomplish on Masterclass. Every year, I get really into the classes offered and the instructors offering them. Like, I'm all over the place with the things that I like on Masterclass. But this year, I am very interested in the class Redefining Feminism, which is 14 lessons from Gloria Steinem.
Okay.
Now, they dissect issues women face in the U.S. and ways we can play a role in the feminist movement in our everyday lives. Look, I majored in women and gender studies in college, so this is right up my alley. But even if you didn't, even if you're like, this is the first time I'm hearing those words.
I would argue, especially if you didn't.
Yes. Get into it with Masterclass, because this is the year you can really learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Go from just talking about improving to actually doing the things you've been wanting to do with Masterclass. And it doesn't have to be redefining feminism with Gloria Steinem. It can be gardening in your own garden or your yard or patio. It can be learning to cook Indian food or designing a space that you love. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master like negotiation with Chris Voss or think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or maybe capture your vision through photography with Petra Collins, Masterclass has you covered. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/F35. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/F35. That's masterclass.com/F35.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave, it's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30+. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like, zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Our guest today is Dr. Michelle Harper. Michelle, welcome to Forever 35. We're so thrilled to have you.
Thank you. It's so fun being here.
Well, we're going to get into it. And before we do, I would like to read your bio for our listeners so they get a sense of who you are. Dr. Michelle Harper has worked as an emergency room physician for more than a decade at various institutions, including as chief resident at Lincoln Hospital in the South Bronx and in the emergency department at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Philadelphia. She's a graduate of Harvard University and the Renaissance School of Medicine at Stony Brook University. She has appeared on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, NBC Nightly News, MSNBC, Fresh Air, and more. And her first book, The Beauty in Breaking, was recently released in July. It was an instant New York Times bestseller and has been called Wise and Elegant by the Boston Globe, A Book for Our Time by Ms. Magazine, Riveting, Heartbreaking, Sometimes Difficult, Always Inspiring by the New York Times Book Review. And past Forever 35 guest Elizabeth Gilbert raved that it's extraordinary and beautiful.
I agree.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it truly is. And we're so thrilled to have you on to discuss all things about your book and self-care, especially as it relates to someone working in the medical profession, which I think as we know all the time, but especially right now, involves intense stress and challenges and can possibly be very hard to find times for self-care when working as a doctor.
It's really true. And especially now during the pandemic and the limitations, I mean, so many of my go-tos, for example, I love going to art museums. It's or hanging out with certain friends and meeting up for coffee or happy hour. So it's hard. I mean, we're all having to be so flexible about how we adjust and take care of ourselves. And as a physician working through the pandemic, I'm no stranger to it. I do feel especially fortunate and blessed, though, that at least I have a job. I know this is a lot harder for a lot of people during this time. That's not lost on me.
I love that you mentioned that viewing art is part of your self-care practices. I read that in an interview you did, and I thought it was such a beautiful act of self-care, and I don't think it's one we've discussed yet on our show. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about it. Are you a museum goer? Is it something, how have you adapted it now that we're in a pandemic? Tell us everything.
Oh, I mean, I have to tell you, sadly, that's one part that I feel tremendous loss about, because I haven't found a way to adjust that appropriately. You know, when it comes to yoga, I can do yoga on demand and do that in my living room, as annoying as that is. But I can do that. But for museums, they have been for years now my temple. I'm spiritual, I'm not religious, but the act of going to a museum for me, I mean, I feel like I'm entering a church, a temple. It is so deeply spiritual for me. And it was part of my regular routine. I mean, people, there are people in Philadelphia will tell you, yep, like I always saw her at PAFA or the Museum of Art, always there. I mean, I love going to lectures, different events they would have, performances. I love going just walking over randomly in the middle of the day and being by myself with the paintings and sculpture. And I continue to support the museums, of course, because I want them to be around when this is all over, when we can comfortably resume our activities there. But it hasn't been the same viewing the art on the computer. I mean, I don't get the sense of the texture or colors in the same way. As good as my computer may be, as good as Apple products are, it's not the same experience. Sadly, so I wait.
Yeah, I mean, there's such solace. Museums are so amazing because you can be alone and be quiet, but you're also often you're surrounded by people or by art. Yeah. And they are really sacred places. Mm-hmm. You mentioned some museums in Philadelphia. Do you have a favorite to visit when we are back in the business of visiting places?
I have to tell you that one of my favorite things to do is just get on the train, because I live in Philadelphia, but it's easy to get to New York City by Amtrak. And I swear to you, I will just, on a day I'm off, get on the train and go to New York City for an exhibit, like MoMA or Guggenheim. I do some research in advance to see who's where. I was planning a trip to Boston because they were having, I'm sorry if I mispronounced this, but Yayoi Kusama exhibit. Not often in the U.S., but there's I couldn't get tickets. It was sold out every time in D.C. But now it was going to be in Boston. Yeah. I was like, this is my chance. And I was planning it in advance. And then the pandemic hit. So I have favorites, but I will. And New York City is one of my favorite places, but I will travel for art. I was like internet stalking when Titus Kaphar would have another exhibit coming up. But then the pandemic. So that's okay. I'm patient. And this is one of the big reasons why I want to stay in good health, because there is art that I must see.
Well, and the Met is open again.
Yes, they are starting to open. They are. And I should look, because, you know, unfortunately, when I looked at one of my favorite museums here, many of the buildings were closed. So there were limited exhibitions. So I'll have to see.
I love how you write in your book about your early morning yoga practice, and you write, yoga is a way back to our whole selves. And I just loved that sentiment and that description of what yoga can be for people, and also your meditation practice, which sounds like it's a really powerful form of self-care for you. So I'm wondering if you could talk about how you started those practices and what continuing those practices has meant for you, especially now that we're in a pandemic and you can't go to your yoga studio or your meditation studio.
So I came to the physical practice of yoga. That was after I was getting divorced. The divorce wasn't final, but I was in the midst of a divorce, had recently moved. I had graduated from residency and was starting over in this new place, Philadelphia, at a new job, and now newly single. So everything just felt like it had come crashing down around me. At this time, I'd been looking forward to, like, finally I was graduating and I wasn't just a doctor, but I was going to be a real doctor now, starting my real doctor job. And I had all these hopes and plans, being in this area, with that and with my husband. And then we would start planning our future. So it was all over and I was devastated in many ways. And I was just searching for a way back to myself so I could feel okay again, feel better again, feel whole. And I knew that would be a process. I knew it would be a journey. And that's what brought me to my first yoga class. And it stayed with me because I recognize that this process of life, there are always challenges. And what I really grieved about my divorce, it wasn't, I mean, he's a good guy, but it wasn't about losing him. It was about losing this story that I had for myself. It was about healing from my, this next level of healing from childhood trauma. As I speak about in the book, it's a memoir. It's, I speak about healing from the trauma of growing up in an abusive home with a batterer for a father and one of the most stable long-term relationships I had had with a man was with my ex-husband. And now that was over and it was triggering in many ways. And I had to look at that. What was a healthy relationship? What are healthy, what is healthy self-love? What does it mean to really be in partnership? So yoga was instrumental in that. And so as I continued to navigate life and the challenges of life, I found that it would remain key. And thank God it did, because it is getting me through this pandemic and book launch in a pandemic and all of these life transitions. So it stayed.
Do you have a specific yoga practice that you do at home? Like do you follow a YouTube channel or other classes?
You know, I do. I love my current studio. I've been with it a long time. And it's been important to me when I can to support local businesses because they have it so difficult. Just in the same way I want to support art museums through this, I want to support various local businesses as well. So I'm thankful my yoga studio transitioned to an online platform. Mm. And so I just continue my membership and continue to practice with them.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm happy about it. And I'm happy that, you know, so far they've been able to weather the storm and I'll do what I can to help them do that.
You mentioned divorce and, you know, it's actually a topic that has come up with listeners of our show of kind of how to take care of yourself following the end of a relationship. In addition to yoga, was there stuff that you did or even still do that kind of helped you process that ending / new beginning in your life?
Yeah. Yes. So many things. And I do want to say, and I remember when I was getting divorced, I remember frantically searching online, like, how do people do this? What are the resources? And I didn't find many at the time. Now, this was, oh gosh, almost 10 years ago that it was finalized. So it was a while ago. I'm hoping resources have changed. And I do want to start by saying that I don't know if people often lead with this, but I feel that divorce is a blessing. I really do. I don't want there to be stigma around divorce. I think divorce is wonderful. I feel like people should never be held in bondage for any reason. And there's so much pressure to be in a relationship, I mean, especially for women, that somehow our sense of self, our relevance is largely determined by our relationship, specifically in relation to a man. And I don't believe that. I don't think that's necessary. I think divorce is great. So once I got through it, that's my perspective. And what I used at the time, because at the time it wasn't my perspective, was yoga, meditation, a therapist, and like whatever I could find spiritually. I call it spiritual coaching because I heavily relied on people like Pema Chodron, Tar Brach. More recently, I've come to Eckhart Tolle, and I would read their books, listen to any video I could find online about it. So all of those tools helped me get through it. And truthfully, I still use all of those tools today just because I feel like it helps me be a grounded human in general, and it's helped me evolve and grow.
Well, and you know, as we mentioned, you are a practicing physician who is mm-hmm. is working today during this pandemic. And we've actually have heard from a lot of nurses, doctors, administrators, people in medical professions about this time and kind of navigating self-care. How would you advise other people in medical professions to take care of themselves during this time when they're really being pushed to, I know it is part of the profession to really be challenged mm-hmm. and pushed at all times, but this seems significantly different. I'm a layperson, but so I could be wrong.
It's so different in many ways. I would say that, well, I'm in the Northeast. I practice clinically in the Northeast now. And in terms of volume, and also an ER doctor, in terms of volumes in the ER, in terms of acuity of disease from COVID, they are not like they were several months ago when we were in the thick of it, where we were just slammed with super sick patients. And that, in that case, and I know there are some regions in the country that are in that. And during that time, honestly, all you can do is survive. You do what you do to get through it. You work, you sleep, and you just try to, quite literally, in these circumstances, live and help other people live. And then as you can, like for us now, where it's not as busy, incorporate those practices that can help you restore, rejuvenate, and restore. And I just want to make that clear because I want to be realistic. And when you're in the middle of a war, you can't go get a massage. It's just not practical. It's not how it works. When you're in the war, you get through the war, and then you do what you can to pick up the pieces. When you're after survival mode, then you thrive. And that's where we're at. And we're bracing. And I would encourage all of us who have the luxury of time right now and the luxury of health, because not everybody has that, to use those practices, because we don't know we're approaching fall. We don't know what's going to happen yet. We have to be realistic, and we have to bolster our resources so we're ready. One thing I find, though, that doesn't sound too hopeful, but it's real. One thing that really does help me, though, is I do have this practice of, you know, Tara Brach will say radical acceptance, and I say radical honesty. I really believe that there's something really healing and supportive about being honest about how I feel about the situation I'm in, and then acting from that place. Mm. So when I say what's happening in the state of medicine, I'm just going to be honest about it. It is difficult. It is challenging. We don't have the resources we need. We have to do what we can to take care of ourselves. I mean, in the midst of this, healthcare providers are being fired and furloughed. Our hours are cut. Our pay is cut. I mean, it's very demoralizing. That is healthcare in America. It helps me to be honest about that. It helps me to look for the places where I have agency, providing care for people that I can, providing care for myself, and then being active in ways that I can to change the system so that it is actually functional and focuses on care.
You know, I'd love to talk about the ways, this is a running theme throughout your book, but the ways that race plays into treatment and how patients can advocate for themselves and how doctors can advocate for themselves. I mean, you have a really, really intense anecdote about when you were not given a promotion at one of the hospitals you were working at. And the, as you, I think you describe him, the liberal white male doctor is just kind of passing the buck, right? Like he's saying, oh, you know, I really tried to get you that promotion, but didn't work. So, you know, in this system that is just like inherently unequal, how are patients supposed to advocate for themselves if they are people of color in a predominantly white system that doesn't understand them or want to advocate for them?
Right. Yeah. And that's a common theme that is tragic and terrible and unfair. It's for patients. I think it's very hard. You know, I'll share this story because I feel like it exemplifies everything we're speaking about. A young woman, she's in her 30s and coming in with a heart racing, shortness of breath. She just feels off. She has thyroid disease. This patient is in the ER because she's already called her primary care doctor, who pretty much doesn't take it seriously, called her endocrinologist, who's like, I don't know, it's not me. Call your primary care doctor. Primary care doctor, nobody's actually seen her. Her symptoms are getting worse. Primary care calls in some new blood pressure medicine. She continues to get worse. Of course she does. I'm now seeing her in the emergency department. Actually, I wasn't the first provider to see her. One of the mid-levels saw her. I saw her information on the tracking board and I was concerned. I thought she might be sicker. Then the triage note said, so I went to the room when he was seeing her. He's an older white male, mid-level provider. And I said, oh, how's she doing? What's happening? He's like, oh, she's fine. Whatever, some medication issue. I took the case from him because I knew she wasn't fine.
Yeah.
And I knew that already so many people had failed her. And we spoke. Long story short, I ended up stabilizing her. I admitted her to the intensive care unit.
Oh my gosh.
None of this had to happen. She was really sick. Multiple organs now were not functioning properly because everyone kept blowing her off and not taking her seriously. And she said to me that she was trying and no one was taking her seriously. And I said to her, I take you seriously. I believe what's happening and I'm very concerned. So we're going to take care of this for you. And we did. And that happens all the time. And it's extremely difficult for patients because this is an example of a person who kept trying and trying and was getting nowhere.
Yeah.
And then one day she met somebody who took her seriously and it worked. Meanwhile, she could have died. And we see this all the time with infant mortality, with Black women dying in childbirth. It's an ongoing issue. And so what's the solution? She did the right thing, but she never stopped. She kept until she got an answer. But then the other part of the solution is people, you know, it's not really fair. She was sick. How far could she have gone with this? But then that's why there are people like me there to advocate, people like you who are bringing this up on your podcast, because those of us who have more privilege, whether it's because we're not as structurally disenfranchised, or we have more money, or we're in the position, you know, of a physician, we have to use our, it's my opinion anyway, that we have to use our power to help people in the acute setting and also to change the inequity structurally.
Yeah, I think it's so important and such a good reminder of those of us who, as you say, are in positions of privilege to use that privilege for good. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts on how those of us in that privileged space can fight for change? in the medical system to make it more equitable?
Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, this is going to be a multifaceted approach. Having these honest discussions is important. Naming the problem is important. I mean, and then we get into, oh my gosh, voting. Having people, you know, whether certain people themselves want to become politically engaged in terms of running for office. Yes, being involved in the political process, whether it's by running for that office yourself, and then always for all of us, voting for people who are going to tackle these issues in ways that are positive and meaningful. Critical. So all of us can do that. And then, you know, in medicine, we have to look at our implicit bias and how that plays out. Or it's not always implicit. Implicit and explicit. and changing it. There needs to be accountability. Like, it shouldn't be okay to be racist or sexist or homophobic. That has real detrimental health outcomes. People need to be held accountable for that. We need to have equal pay, justice in hiring and promotion. So it's gonna take work on all fronts.
It's hard not to be discouraged. But I find that, like, your overall message is really focused, is very hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you identify as a hopeful person? And if so, like, what makes you hopeful?
I think that was brilliant the way you put it. I do identify as hopeful. I am not often optimistic, but I am a hopeful person. And I think that I feel like the difference is rooted in faith. And I have so much faith. And I do have faith in the essence of humanity. And so that's what keeps me going. It also keeps me going that, and I'm going to paraphrase Audre Lorde right now, but she has a famous statement where she says, you know, when I use my voice, when I'm focused on my vision, then it doesn't matter whether or not I am afraid. And in the same way, because I'm focused on the mission of healing, and I call myself an abolitionist. And I mean, because I advocate for freedom of all kinds, and I feel that all people should be free spiritually, emotionally, physically. And because those are the missions that are important, how I feel about it, you know, whether or not I'm afraid or sad or discouraged, it doesn't matter. What matters is the mission, and that's what keeps me hopeful and persistent.
You have a really, so, well, I should back up and say that each chapter of your book kind of centers around a different patient or patients that you treated in the ER and kind of what you learned from them. Mm-hmm. And you have this really powerful chapter about a patient named Joshua who has metastatic cancer. And it seemed like you really learned a lot from him, not just from treating him, but actually from him. And I'm wondering, like, what else have you learned from your patients? Have you learned about self-care from them? What have you kind of taken away from the interactions with patients like Joshua?
Joshua was one of those encounters that would stay with me forever, because in the face of this diagnosis, his cancer came back and now it was metastatic. The prognosis for, I mean, survival, let alone recovery, was not good. But in the face of that, he demonstrated such equanimity, such grace. He already knew. And he said that he felt good in his body. He felt good with his family. And he just wanted to feel good like that and live the way he wanted to. He happened to be a vegetarian, like eating healthy foods, being with his family, being outside. That's what he wanted to enjoy for however much longer he had on this earth. And what I took from that, which is so powerful for me, is that we don't often have control over what's going on in our lives. The only thing we have control over is how we respond to it. And that our grounding, our contentment, even in many respects, our joy, and I use that word in a spiritual way, our joy ultimately doesn't have anything to do with the external factors. Mm. And I love that. You know, when we talk about divorce or the ends of relationships, it's all the same. It, you know, our sense of rooting and contentment and purpose comes from within. Mm-hmm. Then the rest is, you know, they're trappings that can come and go. Sometimes they're nice, sometimes they're not. And so that's why I, you know, Joshua wasn't there to improve my life,
right?
But it's a byproduct. That's just what happened, which was so beautiful. And I'm thankful to him for that. And those are the kinds of lessons I learned from my patients. I mean, whether it's that or learning about forgiveness, and what the true meaning of forgiveness is, or learning about the courage to be vulnerable. Like a young woman who came to the ER and was feeling really depressed because she felt isolated during coronavirus because somebody at her job was harassing her and the patients were mean to her. The clients, she was a grocery store clerk, were mean to her, and she had no one to talk to. So she really came to the ER just to talk to someone. I mean, her openness, she's like a 20-something-year-old woman, her openness just seeking for help, doing whatever it took to get help, being willing to be open and vulnerable. These are the lessons that I learned from my patients that I'm grateful for. You know, they're not always, not all of my patients are sympathetic either.
No, definitely not.
I purposely bring that up because, you know, whether it's a man I have to take care of who there was a violent behavior alert because he sexually assaulted a physician who was trying to help him during the course of care, groped her. And that's the alert I see on the screen before I then have to see him. And turns out he was very sick that day. And I did take care of him. He had a hernia that needed to be operated on. And one of the things I learned in that moment was that I have to be careful. I mean, yeah, my anger for his past behavior was righteous and justified, and he should be held accountable for it. No woman should ever be assaulted. No person should be assaulted at any time, much less in the course of their work. The institution should have to address that. And in that moment, he wasn't doing those things and he had a life-threatening illness. And my commitment is to do my job well, to do no harm, and to heal people. So I needed to put the story aside and do that. And so for me, even that encounter was very important. And that's a really important story now as we see so much division, so much heinous behavior that people have exhibited. But still, I would hope, like, I have to dig deep sometimes to get past the heinous behaviors of others to still live in integrity. And it's my hope that we can all find a way to do that, to be our best selves, even in extremely difficult circumstances.
That's really powerful.
Yeah, I love what you say about healing. By healing ourselves, we heal each other. By healing each other, we heal ourselves. That kind of circular relationship is really, really amazing. And healing has been such a it's such a focus of your own life, and then it's what you provide to others. So that's that relationship is really fascinating and inspiring.
Yeah, thank you. And I do really feel like it's the only way forward. And even in that case I was talking about, you know, that night, every doctor who helped that person was like, I'm a woman. The first surgeon on who I called was a woman. The surgeon who later took him to the operating room was a woman. And I thought to myself, I have no proof that he was decent or changed. But if he was going to become a better person, the universe just provided him this exam, this opportunity to look at his behavior, because the people who literally saved his life, who had to examine his hernia was inguinal, who had to examine his incarcerated genitals that were going to potentially kill him, the woman, who, the people who cured him in that moment, all of them were women. So by me providing this service in an objective way, and by all these other women doing that, maybe, just maybe, that was his opportunity to correct himself. I don't know, but I feel like it's instances of, like that, that that are, as a society, our way forward.
You have such grace in the situation, though, and that's I think often hard for many of us. Listening to you talk, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could, if I would have the same reaction. That's really amazing. I am going to switch gears to a much more superficial note to end on. We have been on having an ongoing discussion on our show about comfortable footwear. And I feel like there is no greater expert about comfortable shoes than a doctor and an ER nurse. I always, whenever I'm in a hospital setting, I always check out what clogs people are wearing. So I am curious, could you contribute to the conversation? Do you have a comfortable shoe that you wear to work that you recommend?
Okay. So that I wear to work, which is an important distinction, because I only wear these to work. I love Danskos. But let me qualify this. Okay. So the reason I love Danskos, like the ones with the hard cover that are shiny, so that when pus and blood hit your shoe, it rolls off your shoe and doesn't go into your sock or on your skin. So that is important.
And I have never thought about that when it comes to shoes. Oh my gosh. I'm laughing, but that's very intense and very serious.
It's a serious thing. You do not want a pus-soaked sock. That is not how you want your day to end. No. So that's important, but also the structure. I mean, it's just so comfortable. Now, I will say the reason I only wear them at work is it is extremely easy. It's almost inevitable. If you wear them on the street, you will twist your ankle.
Yes. So, oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. I do not recommend them, because I've worn them. I made pre-COVID, I have like done a quick errand after work in them, and it's bad because I do yoga. It's okay. I didn't hurt myself, but I don't recommend it.
This is a hot tip.
This is really a hot tip. I'm so glad we discussed this.
I know. I wear Danskos actually in my real life, but I have rolled my ankle very seriously in them. So it's a real, you pay the price, but they are very comfortable.
And Kate, do you wear it with shiny leather?
So the pus, so all the pus that I encounter in my
life,
all
the pus and blood rolls off your shoe. Roll off.
I don't. I do have shiny patent leather ones, but I literally am thinking about them and I'm like, wow, I've never thought about this service that you provide to medical professionals. I mean, that's, but like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Totally.
It's a big deal. But you know what? Outside of work, the shoe, the shoe I swear by for working out, and then I got their just regular walking shoe. They're QCs. I think they're called. Do you know them?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I wear them and my husband wears them.
Yes.
He works in television, so he's on his feet a lot, but he was like, apparently doctors wear these. So it all comes back around. Yes, they're on cloud.
Yes. The only shoe I wear for working out, because I had a terrible, when I was running more, terrible hamstring injury. And the guy at the store said, you need this shoe. And I did. It rehab my injury, and now I swear by them. So now I got their walking shoe. So like when I would take the train to New York, I would wear them, and they're the best.
Well, you've really covered literally everything. Yes. This has been so, so awesome to get to talk to you. I mean, I feel like we could go on for hours, but it'll take up your whole day. But Michelle, this has been, it's been amazing. Can
Truly.
you, Can you let our listeners know where they can learn more about you and also where they can acquire your book?
Yes. More about me. My website's a good source, michelleharper.com. And I'm on Instagram. I'm not so good with social media, but I am on Instagram too. But my website's good. My book, you could always go to my author page from Random House, or my website shows links. And I always say, if you can support your local bookstore by getting it there, that's a beautiful thing, or bookshop.org, which also helps to support local bookstores.
Well, Michelle, it was so great to talk to you. I learned so much, and we just really enjoyed our conversation. So thank you again.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Can you imagine if you lived in Philly and you got to the ER and Dr. Harper was your doctor?
I'd be thrilled.
I know.
It
seems like she'd be so calm.
What you're saying is reminding me how I felt when we did that interview, which was like, I just felt like we were in good hands. As people interviewing someone, she was just so wonderful to talk to. So yes, that would be a dream.
Totally. We should probably move to Philly if you try to do that.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Shout out to our listeners in Philly.
Yes. Thank you for being you. Shout out to Gritty.
Shout out to the Eagles. No?
Nope. Nope.
Shout out to cheesesteaks. Shout out to those stairs that Rocky runs on.
Yep, the Rocky stairs.
Yeah, and that's about...
Shout out to the Roots.
Okay. Shout out to Rittenhouse Square.
Shout out to Rittenhouse Square.
That's like not a cool place to shout out, right?
No,
that's
like
a fancy,
it's like
old
shouting
person.
Out like the Upper East Side.
Yeah. I went to a wedding there once in 2005, so that's my only reference point is that wedding. Wow.
Well,
I love shouting out the three things I know about Philadelphia, which is a beautiful city. I have been there.
It is a beautiful city. And I hope, you know, I hope that one day when we are allowed to travel and have live events again, we can do an event in Philly.
Oh, I would love it because I feel
people
know how to get the F down in Philadelphia.
They do. They
like,
do.
It is. I don't know. It's a cool.
Town. All of the stuff on social media and the talk of Philly did make me very nostalgic for Philly. Mm. Because like that was where I lived in my early 20s, like my early and mid 20s.
Yeah.
So I'm also probably just like nostalgic for that time.
Of course.
I'm not like I don't want to go back to that time, but you know, it's such a carefree time.
Dory, I know
for
it.
A lot of people,
I
it was
know
for
it.
Me. Even though I didn't know it at the time, because I was a dum-dum.
Oh my gosh. All right. Dory, what is your intention this week? Last week you were working on not worrying about election stuff.
Yes. So I just, you know, I was really trying to just like be in the moment, which I actually think, you know, I talked about memes at the beginning of the show, and I think that the memes were kind of my way of doing that, of just like staying in the moment. And not like getting, as I said last week, like pre-worried or pre-anxious. Just like, this is where we are right now. So I think I did that. This week, I want to just get a head start on holiday shopping.
Ugh, I need to do that. How is it November? And how
I know.
Is this the thing we have to do?
I know. I know. So, I don't know. Think about that.
I would like the Dyson hair curler in case you want to get a head start on that for me.
Okay. Good
Thank
to
you.
Know.
Thank you yep. so much.
Okay.
Okay. Last week, my intention was to do a piece, some sort of action, social justice action, to because the work doesn't just end when this election happens, right? That's what I was trying to kind of consider. And I did sign up to make phone calls for both the Senate runoff races in Georgia. So I'm very excited about that. So I'll be working on that.
That's awesome.
Now, this week, I have kind of an embarrassing, well, I guess it's not embarrassing, but here's what it is, Dory. I want to plan out our holiday decorations and I want to go like balls to the wall crazy with holiday lights.
Yes. Are you guys going to be one of those houses that people like drive past slowly?
No, I want to be one of those houses that like you notice. Like, I don't want it to just be like you have like one little like beep of a light. You know, like, or it's like, you just like threw a string of lights on a bush. I want to be like tastefully done with a bit of pizzazz or humor, but not overdoing it.
Okay. So you're not going to have any of those like blow up Santas in the, on your lawn.
I don't think so. I have to kind of figure it out, but like, I was going to like sketch out my vision. I feel like this feels beyond my reach. I'm not a visual person. Decorating kind of overwhelms my brain, but I really love the winter holiday season, and I miss my family so much, and we're not going to see them. And
yeah,
I get really nostalgic, especially being from the East Coast, and it reminds me of my mother. And I just kind of want to make it. Plus, like, everything has been really hard this year. So if I can like brighten it by blasting my tunes and stringing up the lights that we have, I'm going to do it.
I love that. I mean, Matt is also thinking this way. Like, he has been like, we are starting Christmas early because like, what else do we have this year?
Yeah, I'm going to get my tree up very soon.
Yeah. So we're going to like start decorating really soon.
Can't wait. This is my favorite. Yeah, because you're right. What else is going on? And we're in our houses so much.
Yes.
It might as well be as festive as possible.
Totally. And cozy.
Mm-hmm. And a hygge.
Yes. I'm going to get hygge this weekend.
Oh, you mean like you're going to hygge it up?
I'm going to hygge it up this weekend. Yep.
I'm already kind of, I feel like I'm kind of hygge-ing right now as I'm recording this.
Oh, well, look at you.
Not like I'm trying to one-up you in hygge-ness.
Sure, whatever.
I am in pajama pants.
Queen of hygge.
I'm the head of hygge for this podcast.
I mean, you are.
No, I'm not. I don't feel like I am execute hygge-ness as well as I could. So I'm ready.
Well, I'm ready for just to watch you improve.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, master of hygge.
No, I'm not the master. You're the queen.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Yep. I'm your disciple.
All right, okay. Dora.
All right, Kat.
We've said it all.
We have. There's nothing left to say.
Except Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Sam Reed is our project manager, and our network partner is Acast. And we thank you for listening.
Thank you.